Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
We begin by acknowledging the Gabi Gabi people, the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast episode is being recorded today, and pay respects to their elders, past and present, and to their parents with children with disabilities.
This podcast contains truth, laughter, and the occasional F-word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Well, you probably won't hear quite so much swearing among the beans, you know. Well, yeah. Not suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right, this is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Peas and Beans. Gary Bean here with another Beanstalk. Thanks for joining me. Today you're going to hear my conversation with Steve Sasaki Samuels, all the way from Osaka in Japan. That's just in a few minutes. Before we go to that, I wanted to remind you about the Four Bean Mix, and we are working our way towards a couple of special episodes for Movember, when it's the month when it's okay to talk about men's mental health. So we're working towards that. We'll keep you posted. That will be at least two, perhaps three of the Saturdays throughout November coming up. So without further ado, here is my chat recently with Steve Sasaki Samuels. G'day, Steve.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for asking, and thank you for joining me all the way from Osaka in Japan. It's we've had a little bit of a chat backwards and forwards over time, but not a lot, so I'm really looking forward to getting to know you and talking with you about your family and your dadness, and our listeners are interested to hear that. I'm going to start with the three questions that get us moving and get us talking. So first of all, where are you from, Steve, and where are you now?
Okay, so I'm originally from New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand, and I am now living in Osaka, Japan. So, but that wasn't, I haven't kind of come in that direct route. I left New Zealand when I was about 20 years old. And I went off to the UK for my OE.
OE.
Overseas experience.
Right. Yep.
So I headed off over there, and I actually, my first, I actually ended up going for only 2 weeks and I came back home.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just hated it. I just hated it. I don't think I was ready for it, and the weather was shit. So I just came home.
So much for your overseas experience.
So, and I came home, and then So I got back into another job. And then I went again. And I went, actually, my friend came back who I'd originally gone with. And he was like, hey, let's go again. So I went over again. And I ended up staying there, working and living there for about 7.5 years, 8 years. And it was there that I met my wonderful wife, Junko. And then we left where you kind of decided to up sticks, and we came to Japan. My wife is Japanese. And so we came to Japan with the idea of spending maybe about a year here. We ended up having our first child, Jamie. And really from there, we just ended up staying here. And so we've been here now, well, over 15 years now.
15 years. And you'd be bilingual, I guess.
And no, that's incorrect. Oh, okay. Okay. I tell you, I have to give myself some kind of credit. I can actually hold a very simple conversation. I know I haven't had the time, and I think, you know, it's a lot of factors with Jamie, and my job has played a big part in that. But my Japanese is woeful. I can't read it. I can't read it. No, I can't write okay. it.
Well, that's fine. I understand. But so now your surname is Sasaki Samuels. Now, what's the connection there then? Is that a Japanese name as well?
Sasaki? Yeah, well, yeah, it is. That's my wife's family name. And, Of course, my name, my original family name was Samuels.
Okay.
And so when we got married, I was like, well, why don't we put our names together, just make a double How barrel. Because I was like, let's, like, why not kind of bring things together?
Yes.
So I was like, okay, let's just do this. My wife was like, yeah, okay, that's cool. That sounds like a great idea. So we did that. It was a bit of, I'll be honest, it wasn't the easiest thing from a Japanese kind of administration perspective. That was a little bit of a nightmare, something a bit new for them. Very new, actually. So, but we got it done, and yeah, and so we are Sasaki Samuels.
That says a lot about you, I think, Steve. Well, it does to me. I mean, the fact that you would even consider doing that, where that is not the normal way to go. You don't normally take both names. Often these days, husband and wife will keep their own family name, and that's great too. But to combine the names into your formally recognized name, family name, that's wonderful. Sasaki Samuels.
Yeah, I suppose it was just it was kind of, I wanted us to be, because we're, you know, again, just bringing it together. Because if I take my name, it's just, you know, she still has her first name, but it's like, well, she kind of loses a bit of the identity as to, you know, where she's come from. So I was like, well, let's put it together, and it's nice. I think both families, I think, actually really felt that it was bringing everything together. Yeah.
So that's been well received by both families?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay. We'll certainly return to some of those things. Particularly, I'd be very interested to hear about how things are in Japan when it comes to raising children with disabilities and additional needs, and we'll definitely get to that. Our second question, however, we haven't got past question one yet. Now, listen, Steve, if you could have someone over for dinner who was either famous or just not famous, living or dead, somebody who you know about that you would love to sit down with, who would it be?
I've been thinking about this, actually, and I asked Matt, and I realized that it is a guy called Justin Baldoni. And he may or may not be known to people. And I didn't really know this guy. I didn't even know this guy's name until...
No, I don't. I have never heard of him.
No. Well, he's an American guy. He's a... people may know a show called Jane the Virgin. It was years ago. I never watched it. So, like I say, this is kind of where people may recognize him from or know him from. But I started... I was made aware of him from my sister. She said, like, listen to or read this book. I think she said to me, like, read this book or listen to his podcast. And this was back in I think it was 2019, I think it was as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very much into redefining and talking about men's masculinity and the toxic masculinity that we have as men and how that hinders us from operating in a way it stops us from operating in a very humane way to ourselves, I think.
And yes. Wow.
So I would love to have him over. And just the questions and the discussions that we'd have would be amazing. Yeah.
I'm so glad, you know, that it's a topic that's alive these days, that we're kind of get an understanding of what that is just by hearing it, toxic masculinity, and then we can explore it. And doesn't that relate to dadness and to being a husband and particularly to being a bean? That is amazing. So Justin Baldoni, so he has a podcast, does he?
Yeah, he's got a podcast called Man Enough.
Excellent title.
Yep. And again, this podcast just it has shaped me as to who I am today, sitting right here.
Wow.
It has, life changing. I think there's another way of saying it. It's been a life changing podcast for me to go inside myself and really ask some really bloody hard questions about how I choose to react, and also, you know, to learn to be nicer to myself, better to myself, but also to be more humanity to myself, and that flows on to others around me.
Therefore, to others, yeah. Justin Baldoni, Man Enough podcast. We'll put that in the show notes, and I'm going to check it out. I'm also going to check out your podcast, but we'll get to that. You know, I just heard the other day, it's true, isn't it, that the person we speak to most in our lives, no matter how close we are with anyone, is ourselves. That's the voice we mostly hear in our own head, is our own, is our own voice. And the things we say to ourselves that we would never say to another are quite incredible and have an impact then on the rest of our lives. So thank you for that. So that's your second question. That leads us to our third question then, which brings us into this particular community that's listening. Why would you be called a bean?
Oh, wow. I'm a bean because we have a son who is, his name's Jamie, and he has Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And he also is on the spectrum of has autism.
Okay.
It's okay. As simple as it is, really.
And he's 14 going on 15, I think.
He is. Yep, that's exactly right. Yep.
Okay.
He's a beast.
Okay. And you also have another son who's a little younger.
I do. Yeah, we have a couple of years younger. He's just turned 12, and his name is Joshua. He's an amazing, amazing young man.
Well, tell us about that. How is he amazing?
Oh, I've seen him grow as a boy, and I see him interacting with how my son Jamie is now, because obviously he's younger than Jamie, but how he interacts and how he looks after his older brother, but how he understands him and how he is as a boy, but also being able to communicate, like verbally communicate, much better than probably what I was when I was his age.
Wow.
And I just think he's awesome. He doesn't excel academically, but he is just a superstar.
And we can hear the emotion in your voice, mate, as you're speaking, and I can see it in your eyes as you're talking. That's quite something, isn't it? And so how do they get on together? How do they interact?
Yeah, they get on really well. They are very much brothers.
Yeah.
And I think probably in the last year, they've really started to kind of have a kind of a good bond together. And yeah, Jamie has obviously he's grown up as well. he understands how Joshua relate. He understands probably Jamie sometimes much more than I do.
Yeah.
And he's just very understanding and, refreshing and understanding, yeah.
Wow. And, you know, just hearing you say that, that this reflects on you and Junko as well as his parents. Obviously, there's been a – you've set a tone for them, or you've set a mood, and you've led the way. So good on you for that. But I just particularly appreciate hearing the emotion in your voice as you describe them, your two boys, and how they get on together. Mate, let's go back to when Jamie was born, if you don't mind. How was he premature? How was it at the birth?
Actually, leading up to the birth, it was pretty straightforward. We had a C-section all scheduled, and it was, I think he was just facing the wrong way. So there was just a case of getting kind of waiting to see. And then it was like, okay, actually, we need to kind of schedule another C-section. So that was scheduled in, I think, a week or two in advance. And then it was a couple of, I think it was about a week or two before his due date or something like that. I can't remember, to be honest. So we went in. And it was just, it was basically, we don't have any family here in Osaka, pretty much. We don't. The nearest family to us is in Nagano, and that's about 5 hours drive away from
okay.
here.
Okay. Wow.
So it's just us. But Junko's mum had come down, and she was staying with us and kind of helping out in a way. She went in for the C-section, and I can't be in the room in Japan. In the hospital we were in, you can't be in. You have got to be outside.
Okay.
So I was in the hall just waiting to be a dad with the mum and not really knowing how to communicate to her. Because I couldn't speak Japanese. So we're sitting there, very odd. But anyway.
Some things don't need language, though, do they? I'm sure there were, you know, there was some communication going on in looks.
Yeah, I think we were just like, she was going to have her first ever grandchild, grandson, because we knew it was going to be a boy. And I was going to be a dad, and that was just terrifying as it was. You know, exciting and terrifying. But so then I think like he came up on a lift in front of us and then kind of whisked him away, I think from memory, something like this. And I don't remember. Basically, the next time I remember seeing him was when we were in this kind of room and Junko was lying down, and they brought him in, and he was kind of put on top of her. Like, there was a koala care kind of thing that they had going on at the school. It was a Christian hospital, and we didn't choose it for that reason. It was just how it all happened.
So kind of like kangaroo cuddles kind of thing.
Yeah. So, he was put on Junko's tummy, and so that was our real first kind of like, okay, here he is. And then he got taken away. I took photos and all that kind of stuff, and then I got the doctor called me away into a room, and he said, "Oh, he said, can I have a word with you?" And I was like, "Yeah, okay." So I went away with him, and he spoke a bit of English, kind of a bit of English. So that was obviously, you know, a good thing. And he was a pediatrician, I think. So, and he said to me, I just want to have a word with you. I think he said, like, is there any, does your family have any history of something? I think something like that. I was like, no. He said, okay, well, just want to let you know that we think your son might have Down syndrome. And I'm just like, okay, like, right. I don't quite know what that is. And then he said, also, please don't tell your wife. We'd like her not to worry.
Please don't tell your wife.
Yeah. Please don't tell your wife. I remember that very clearly.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. I just said, okay. Because I'm probably in that mode of just like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And
yeah,
so of course. I don't know what Down syndrome is. I know it's, I've heard it before, but I don't know what it is.
Of course. Yeah.
So we left the room and I went back over to my wife. And by now, Jamie had kind of moved on into somewhere else. And I think I just told her straight away. I just told her.
Yeah, yeah. Of course you did. I mean, how are you not going to tell her something like that? What?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, how am I supposed to go through the rest of the day?
Yeah.
I had to tell her, and it was, yeah, and there was just tears on top of tears.
Yeah. I mean, that is amazing. I guess this doctor was going to tell her himself or something, but who knows? But what a position to be put in. All I can say is good on you for ignoring that advice and just going straight ahead. I mean, and it's not just for your sake, but she needs to know what's happening too. She has every right to know what's happening. Okay, so you hear these terms, Down syndrome. How did it go from there over the next couple of weeks? Was he in a special care nursery?
He basically, well, straight after we were told that he had no anus.
Really?
And this was also sometimes a common thing with Down syndrome children, is they were born without an anus.
Yeah.
And so also they had to operate straight away.
Mm.
They had to make it happen. And so that's what they did. And they were, I think the operation was a success. And I think at about 11 o'clock at night, they came out. And actually, my wife reminded me of this last night because we were looking at pictures last night. And she said to me, that's right. She said, I remember how they came out and they all these doctors kind of, I swear there was like six of them in front of us. And they were kind of sitting there almost like a school photo. I remember it being like a school photo for some reason. And they sat there, and one of them, he's a great doctor, he said, in English, he said, your son now has a beautiful anus.
Wow.
And at that time, I just heard was, it was just words. It didn't mean anything. But now I can laugh about it. I can just laugh. Like, what a thing to say.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was just like, okay, like, That's great. He has this anus now, but also we didn't really know what that would mean for us as well. Mm. We had no idea what that would ultimately be for us as we kind of go forward in his life.
And we what as, has as kind it of been?
Yeah. It's I mean, it's you know, he's 14 years old and we're still he has you know. He has troubles with, those with going to the toilet still.
Yep. Okay.
And we're very fortunate. He doesn't have to have the, I can't remember, what's on the side. It's like a
colostomy.
colostomy. That's one. Because I said, like, he may have to have this. They don't know later on or something. And again, I was just like, I don't know what that is. I'm just in shock. That's basically it. I'm in shock. And unable to process it, really. They said that they had done the operation, and then he was in a NICU, NICU, and he wasn't, because of his muscle tone. They have very weak muscle tone, Down syndrome children, so he had really, really low muscle tone, and so traumatic. I can't think of any other,
Of course it is. Of course it's traumatic. Yes. And it's mixed up with this bundle of joy at the same time, isn't it? That's part of the trick here that we have to negotiate. We get this most beautiful gift, and alongside it we have this trauma. And both of them are true. They don't negate each other. No, you have to somehow negotiate your way through them.
Yeah, and then there's this numbness that kind of goes on. You feel a sense of numbness because you don't kind of know where to put yourself between those two emotions. So you know, I think I kind of, in some ways, kind of resort to the numbness for a while. And it was only when he came home. I think when he kind of came home, which was just under 1 month, he came home. It was only then that actually I felt like, maybe I can actually start to be a dad now. But it was just terrifying as hell.
And how was Jill go through all of that period with her health and with her mindset?
She was, well, I think, she had the C-section, so she was in there for about, she couldn't really kind of get up, and so she was lying down for a lot of the time. But once she could get up, which I think was about 3 or 4 days after, so she couldn't go and see him, actually. And so she finally was able to use a walker and get down into the NICU and see him down there.
And you were able to be around during that time?
Yeah. I think I might have been able to go. I think I was able to go in before her, because obviously I can. It was just more. She couldn't go in. She was just bed bound, essentially.
Yeah.
So I was able to kind of go in, and into the set, into that room of just noise, and noise and foreign language and just. Total, like, a situation which I don't think no one wants to be in.
Good on you for being there, mate. Good on you for being there. I mean,
well, you've got no choice, have you? You've got to show up. That's what we've got to do. And that's what I did.
Well, that's what you did. That's what you did. And I'm just saying good on you, because not everyone perhaps does, but you did. And to this day, those few weeks in the NICU are with you, aren't they? They never really go away.
Yeah, they do stay with you. That's for sure. And that's trauma. And I never for 11 years I never realized 11 years
that it was trauma.
Yeah.
So for those 11 years, how was that then, if it hadn't been sort of named for you? What was it like for you as dad for those 11 years?
Yeah, I was looking through photos last night, and I was looking at myself, and I think I had pushed the trauma, in a sense, I kind of pushed it to the back. And I was able to operate as a dad, as me, because I was happy. And think, to be honest, like it was, we did some pretty crazy stuff, me and my wife. Like we actually, Joe was a very easy baby to look after in the sense of he was very quiet. He didn't move around very much because of his muscle tone. So he was, a lot of the time, he was in a pram or we're holding him. So we could go places. We were really fortunate. We could go traveling and so we were kind of, you know, still living in a sense, a bit of that life. The poem, you know, Welcome to Holland, which I just love that poem. I think in a sense we were kind of living, still trying to live in Italy, very much so. He had operations, he had, part of his intestine, large intestine removed, like when he was, I think he was like under 1 year old. And so we had these things in between here, but outside of those, when we weren't in the hospital, was that we were still trying to have somewhat of a normal life because, we're pretty free kind of spirited people. We were doing this and that for years.
So what was involved then in terms of his development, his schooling, his interaction with other children?
Well, he went into he went into a nursery, just a mainstream nursery. This was after he had his operation on his intestine, which allowed a little bit more for him to have a better quality of life and make it a little bit easier for us as well. So he was in just regular nursery, and also he went into regular kindergarten. He had when he was in nursery, he didn't really move around too much. He only started to move around on his own on the floor, on his hands, and kind of doing a bum shuffle. That was when he was about four.
Okay.
So he, as I'm saying, we had it a little bit easy in that sense that we could go and do things. He wasn't so mobile. So we could go away and travel and things like that. But after that, it kind of became more challenging. Kindergarten was really good. He had kindergarten was able.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
To have a support teacher for him, or support helper, I should say, and that was amazing. That was great. We did. It wasn't all, happy days with that, but we made it through there. And then we were like, okay, the school, like starting school, elementary school, and this is where it got a little bit interesting. We we decided that we were going to look at both. Well, we decided to go mainstream. So we went to our local, just a public school, and the nearest one, and we popped in and said, you know, I'm thinking of coming here with Jamie, and this is how he is. And they were kind of very Japanese about it, but also they weren't overly welcoming. Mm. And they were like, oh, maybe actually you could go visit the special needs school. We can refer you over to the special needs school. And, you know, they might get better, you know, get looked after better over there. And mm-hmm. anyway, when we had that conversation, I didn't kind of think anything about it. And then we kind of got home, and then we went and looked at the special school, and the special school was like something else on a whole new level. We basically decided that we wanted to really go to the mainstream school. We just got, because he'd been essentially mainstreamed all the way.
Yeah. Okay.
And we were like, we want to continue this on. And a lot of his friends who were in kindy.
Of course they were, yeah.
They were asking Junko. They said, oh, he's going to school next year, isn't he? Like, he's coming to the school. And Junko's like, yeah. Like, and so they didn't see him any differently from anyone else. And
yeah.
Like, and so that also was a big part of it, because like, he's got friends, and friends are massive. Friends are like, because
absolutely,
they look out, you know.
Mm.
So we actually, the school was, less than interested. And so we started a petition. And we actually, we got a lot of local support, and we also got international support. We had national news. We had the Kansai Osaka News. They all came over. We were on TV. We had the camera crews in the house. And because of what we were doing, we were trying to stand up for inclusion.
And this was real news.
This is real news. This was like, we were on this, I think it was like the 6 o'clock news. And we just were like, well, this is what we want. It wasn't just about him. It was also about just letting people know that, like, you can't push these kids away. Like, we're just wanting the reasonable accommodation. That's all we want. We're not asking for the world. We just want him to be, you know, ideally in that class, and with his friends, and have if he can have that kind of teacher to help him through and, you know, aid him through it. Like, that's, and I know that everyone has really different experiences. I know
that's true. That's true. But this is your experience. So what happened?
Yeah, it is. And I, you know, it's, and we, you know, we got there. We got 5,000 signatures. We handed it over to the Osaka City Education Board. They basically they replaced the principal and the vice principal, and they brought in a new principal and vice principal.
And because of this whole petition and so on?
I guess so, because it was I to be honest, like, I just think that, again, I don't have anything against the previous principal, vice principal. I just think they, again, didn't know how to, they weren't educated. They just didn't know how to accept, and they didn't know how to welcome these, you know, welcome children like Jamie. And so they got someone in that was able to make that happen. They got in. He's been in there, and he was in there for 6 years. And it was, you know, there were, you know, always discussions about how to make it better for him. And And we were like, we don't want him to be in the special needs class down there. Because I was like, that's not inclusion. That's separation. He's in the same school, but he's not. For me, there was like no difference. It's like he's, for me, inclusion is with his friends in that class. And when he's around other kids, he behaves better as well. That's what I think. Because he, it's kind of that kind of crowd mentality, is he kind of, you know,
yeah,
blends in, you know.
So he's had good peers all the way through, good friends.
Yeah, he's actually had some great friends, and he continues to have these friends. And even actually, it's funny, even today we were just at his school, because he's now in junior high school, and we were just at his elementary school, and we went to read a book. We do the book reading like once a month or something in the morning. And one of the kids, I have no idea who it was, and they, my wife heard, she said, oh, this kid like said, oh, that's Jamie's mum and dad. Like, and I was like, that, you know, this kid is, I don't know how he knows Jamie, but he's probably about five, he's grade three. So it's like 4 years different, 4 years younger than Jamie. Right. So he would have been, if I don't know how he knows, but he would have been put grade one when Jamie was grade six. So it would have been six, like that's the difference when they would have essentially met. But I think that was the impact that Jamie had, that created the change within that school, was profound. And I think that, and it still goes on, because so many other parents now have come to the school with children who have special needs and disabilities, and the local authority kind of essentially recommends the school because of how it is, which is fantastic. But it's also frustrating because there's all these other schools that, you know, that probably are closer to other people's houses, but they travel to this school, which is great.
It's a mixed blessing, isn't it, to be a trailblazer?
It
sounds like you and he have been trailblazers at this school and in this district and for the whole country, you know, showing a way that this could be done.
I've never thought of myself as that. I'll be honest. I've never thought, but as that, as my wife as well, because I mean, my wife is just like, she's a superstar. She's a goddamn superstar. I don't know how she does it. Because, like,
hello, Junko. You're a superstar. Junko.
I love you, Junko, by the way. She's going to listen to this.
Goddamn superstar.
Well, I just don't know how she, like, it, I mean, I'm a wreck. Some days I'm just a wreck. And, like, she just operates when I can't. And I now I just put my hands up in the air and I'm just like, I just can't do this shit. I'm out. And that's more of a recent thing. That's very recent because I've become more aware of who I am as a dad and as a man. Like, whereas I used to just battle on and just, fight the toxic masculinity within me. But now I just, I'm like hands up. I'm like, I'm out. I need time away.
Well, let's talk about that in one sec. Before we do, can you describe Jamie to us? If we met Jamie, who are we meeting? Who is this young man?
It depends where you are, to be honest. I think if you were to meet him, like with us, if you were just, walking on the street and meet us on the street, I think you would see a boy who's, who has obviously has the look of Down syndrome, but it's hard to sometimes get to know him until you actually spend a little bit of time with him and he starts to be with you, kind of understand you. But he is he is very sensitive. He's an incredibly sensitive kid. Like, he will pick up on things and just, you know, he will surprise you, like with how he might come over and, you know, put his arm around your neck and, you know, try and, you know, bring you down to your knees, like, you know, put you in a headlock if he feels that way inclined. Like, because he's 50 odd kgs now. And so, but he's got a heart of gold, and he, you know, yeah, when he smiles, and when I'm not ready to smile, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself to receive that smile and enjoy that smile, because I, you know, I sometimes am not allowing myself to be human and kind of enjoy it. So
you've used the term toxic masculinity a few times, and you've talked about getting on with it for years and years, and then hearing the word trauma, and the last few years have changed some things for you. It seems to me you're at a point right now where this is quite difficult to talk about, but you reached out to talk, and I wanted to say I appreciate that, because I think I understand the reasons why you did. I know you've been listening to the 2Ps podcast over the years, and you've listened to Rob's Dad Ability podcast, and you've listened to the Beans and the Bean Mixes and so on. And I think you said to me, you know, that you believe this was an important thing for us dads to be able to speak and to be heard. How are you at the moment, mate?
I'm probably the best place I've been in a very, very long time. And I know it, like, for someone listening, like, well, yeah, he's crying away here. Like, that's because it's emotion, and I'm expressing emotion. Like, because if I, that's what, as men, we tend not to do. We tend to not allow ourselves to be emotional, to be vulnerable. And I've kind of asked to your question, like, kind of toxic masculinity, and even putting that word toxic in front of it, and people shy away. A lot of guys just turn off when you talk about it. They don't want to. They think that if you take away any kind of masculinity with them, is that they become a woman. Oh, and heaven forbid that. Like, oh my God. You know, but it's like, no, I've just realized, in the last really 6 months to a year, listening to the podcast and the Man Enough podcast, and through therapy as well, counseling. All these things is that I have allowed. I'm on the journey. I haven't fully allowed myself. I'm going to be really open about that. As I've allowed myself to be more human to myself, and to be like this, exactly like this, and I think that, you know, It is extremely healthy to do this. And my wife still has to sometimes, you know, ask me if I'm okay. She's like, are you okay? Like, I'm like, yeah, like, I'm good. This is healthy. Because otherwise it's just all boiling up, and it's not getting anywhere. I'm not releasing it. And you know, and I think for me to operate as a dad, as a father, to Jamie and my and to Joshua and to Alfred as a husband, to be the best person and also be the best boss. I've just got to be really human to myself. And if I can be more human to myself, then sure as shit I can be more human to people around me. And I can shed the feeling of I can be real to myself. I think this is really key here, is I can be real. And I feel like I don't need to be something I'm not. I can just be who I am, not trying to be something or pretend that I know something when I don't. You know, that kind of is, I still feel myself with that. Like, you know, I have to just sometimes remind myself and be like, I don't have all the answers. I don't have the answers for this. I don't need to put on that face of like, I know what it is. Like, I've got this. Like, no, like, I don't have this. I don't know. And let's try and find these answers. Let's work it out. I want to hear. And we as men and women as well, we have two ears and one mouth. And I just think we need to use our ears so much more than my mouth. And that's what I've just started to listen so much more. Less is more. Talk a little bit less, but listen and just hear what people are going to say. Hear it. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to agree with it, but you can just hear it and just listen to it. And that is fucking huge. That is just, it's a game, for me, it's a game changer. It is a journey for me, a continuous journey of how to work out my toxic masculinity that I have and move forward and keep learning what to, build on and be better at. I am who I am. I'm not going to try and be something I'm not. And I just want to be JB's dad.
Thank you, mate. Thank you. Tell us about your podcast.
So I'd been thinking about it for about probably about a year or so. And I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. And earlier, kind of about probably 3 or 4 months ago, I was talking to my therapist and I was like, I think I've worked out what I want to do. And I realized that one thing that I felt I was so isolated, especially living here in Japan, that kind of compounded massively what was going on, is I had no social network. I had no social network of dads, I felt, for 11 years, basically. I felt to myself that what I wanted to put myself out there, I was in the right space, headspace to do this as well, to be for guys to hear another guy talking about their journeys, the good points of it, but also like the tough parts, and I wanted to, like, which is important, because there's always good and bad with everything, and it's just how do we deal with that. But it's a mix of like a self-help kind of thing, podcast, but it's actually my own self-help. It's actually for me in a way.
It's therapeutic. It's therapeutic. Too.
Yeah. The amount of times I've done an episode because I've just not had any time to myself for a week. And the only time I've able to find that is I go down and I do my podcast. And I feel and I'm able to get it out, and I'm like, I've able to talk about this. And that is just what we as men unfortunately are. And I was, again, I'm not gonna say all men are like this, because they're not. So I just feel that it's a massive part to kind of talk about stuff, and even talking into a microphone to myself. But I want to. I have guests on, and
so who do you talk to? Who are your guests?
I talk to dads who have kids with special needs disabilities, and it's really I've had a I don't have a massive network, to be honest, because I kind of shut myself away for 11 years.
Yeah.
And living in this country as well didn't help that. So my two massive factors of everyone else, well, my friends who are in other countries weren't having children like Jamie. And so I was very much on my own.
Mm.
No one to relate to. It's just me and my wife. Just feel like we're just on our own.
So you've got a dozen or so episodes now recorded, and you do this every week. Is that right?
Yeah, I try to, and I think it's every week try and get on the mic and talk to either if I can't get a guest on at that time, I'll find something which is about my journey, because that's the thing, is like that was the key. That's why I did it. And that's why I continue to do it, because it's a voice. And it's a dad voice of how I've gone through. Again, it's a mix of the great moments, but also the really challenging moments of juggling work, juggling being a boss, juggling, just trying to, again, be human. And, and that's sometimes the hardest thing.
The podcast is called Life with Jamie and More, and we can find it wherever we find podcasts.
You can indeed, yeah.
And thank you, mate, for your heartfelt honesty today. I mean, that, as you say, that is healthy. And just hearing that from you is affecting me right now, and to many who are listening also. Can you, I don't know if this is a fair question just off the cuff, but can you put into words what you've learned about yourself, or what you know about yourself now that you didn't before?
Oh, I think I've just learned that I need to understand, be aware of how I really feel, how my body's what my body is telling me, mentally, physically, because a lot of my physical things were so related to how I was mentally, because I wasn't listening to myself mentally for a lot of years. And so I've now learned, and still learning, what to do in these situations. Doing actionable steps. Like, I would have just, I used to just bust through so many walls. I would just bust through so many walls of fatigue and everything for years. And I just like, and I look back and I'm like, how did I do that? How did I manage to like just keep on blasting through these walls? And then came a wall 11 years ago. Couldn't bust through it. Couldn't do it. And was in an ambulance on the way to the hospital. And that was the game changer. That was it. That was where I think that Oh, it did. I know. It's where everything changed. I became, my whole body was giving in. And I had to get away. So I went back home. I went back home to New Zealand to just to decompress and get away from the world that I was in. I took my youngest son, I took Joshua with me because I don't think my wife would have been able to deal with the two boys. I would have come back to God knows what. But I went home for a month, and I just, you know, decompressed, and I was able to talk with friends. And the process started of realizing that really I had just been on just a crazy autopilot for the last, for up until 11 years after Jamie was born. And here I am, you know, four years later. And I'm still going, and I'm still learning how to be nice to myself, still listening to my body, still listening, like my head and my heart. One tells me one thing, one tells the other. I'm trying to listen to my heart a hell of a lot more than my head. And that's goddamn important. That's so important. And that's what I'm doing. And I think that has huge positive effects on my life, like on me directly, on my relationships around me, parenting with Jamie. I'm able to control my anger a hell of a lot more than what I used to, because it would just overtake me. It would overtake me, and it was just, yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm just learning, keep on learning.
You said something earlier about Jamie offering you a smile when you weren't sure you were in a place to receive it, and you received it, and it was a gift to you at the time, which was a lovely way of putting it, by the way. But I have to say, I feel like you've given us a gift today, in your honesty and in your rawness and in your willingness to take us on a little bit of that journey with you. You've certainly given me a gift, let me put it that way, as a fellow dad and as somebody who's a bit locked down and has always been. I appreciate your wisdom and your honesty, and I have to say, you're a bloody good dad, mate.
Thank you. I'm going to receive that, because a lot of guys will be like, no. I'm going to receive it, because we need to receive those things.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I Gary, like, I'm, you know, I honestly, what you're doing is, you know, is life changing for so many. Me, I've listened to your episodes, and I've just been like, you know, there are a few people on this planet who, you know, I've got a lot of time for, and yeah, you're one of them, Gary. So, yeah, anytime.
Thank you very much, Steve, and I would love to come back and talk with you more in a little bit of time. Let's pick this up again, because I'd love to know how things work out, particularly for your podcast and for your life and your journey. And as I say, it was a gift to me, so I wouldn't mind receiving it again at some point. And all the best to you and Junko, and so nice to hear you speak about your wife the way you do. dear. And so thank you for introducing us, at least briefly, to Jamie and Joshua. And we look forward to talking again. But for now, Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So that's our episode. Thanks for listening. It was great to talk with Steve, and I really appreciated his openness and his candor. Just remember, if you are interested in the Four Beans, in the Four Beans mix, answering questions, making comments on issues or topics that you'd like us to talk about, please feel free to email them through to Kate and Mandy or into the Hangout on Facebook, or leave us a speak pipe. That would be really good too. That's coming up in Movember with the Four Bean mix. Thanks for listening today. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.